Welcome back to the Dear Katie podcast. This is Katie Kessner.
And this is Claire Kaplan. And as always, I want to remind our listeners that sometimes we have difficult conversations in our podcast, some which can be very hard to hear, especially for survivors of trauma. So as we always suggest, be sure to take care of your safety and well-being. Please reach out for emotional support from family or friends, a counselor if you have one, or even a hotline. And we will provide some information to you about resources at the end of the podcast.
Thanks so much, Claire. And today, our very special, incredibly cool cat guest is Brandy Jeffries. Brandy has a wealth to share. She and I met on my way to a speech and her way to, I think, an event in North Carolina. And I was delighted to sit next to her and really get to know the coolness of and complexity and vast array in which she makes a difference in the world. So Brandy, welcome to the podcast. Maybe you could share a little bit of your own bio and background with our listeners.
Oh, wow. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. Well, my journey, I have many hats and platforms that I actually sit on and that I wear. My first journey would be into stand-up comedy. It actually began as a child. You know, I've always been like the person in trouble for being the class clown. So it kind of stuck with me. So I've always kind of been drawn to comedy, you know, kind of like an art form for me. So I decided, you know, if I can make people laugh, I might as well try to make some money or just try to do it to, you know, feed people's sad or happy souls, if you will. The other thing that I do, a lot of people are, you know, really surprised. I work in a maximum male security prison. I actually work on death row and I've been doing that now for 23 years. So my skin has become very tough when it comes to guys and some of the best con stories that anyone can possibly think of, you know. My other hat that I wear, I actually got into the acting business by doing stand-up comedy, and then one thing led to another, and I ended up being thrown into movies, serious roles. So ultimately, I am a funny person. I like to be a funny person. I like to do those type of roles, but I always get thrown into like the killing roles, the drama and action role movies. So currently, I'm writing movies right now. I have a production team out of New Jersey, and that's pretty much me.
My goodness.
Yes, I do a lot of things, and I'm really a down-to-earth person, you know, at least I think so.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure Claire's going to think of a million questions, but the one thing I really enjoyed talking with you about in our plane ride was we talked about a couple things, but one thing I thought we could re-explore was, you know, how do we stand up there in this stage light alone?
Yeah.
And, you know, and share such vulnerable stuff. You know, how do we resonate with an audience that's minimum 10 feet and sometimes 100 feet away and make that connective tissue happen in such an emotional, funny, you know, all the emotions of laughter and sadness. And I thought your answer was, you know, I really liked talking to you about that and how we do it.
Right.
Well, maybe let's go back to that conversation first.
Oh, okay. So like, I think we talked about you asked me, how do I prepare for like, you know, I remember that. And that's always like a conversation that everyone asks me, how do you prepare to stay on the stage? But basically, it's a lot of practice just constantly. And like I said earlier, my life, just doing comedy and just being the life of the party, it just kind of comes natural. But in most cases, I might rehearse in front of a mirror. I might be taking a shower and acting like talking to my audience. I record myself. But most importantly, you know, open mics is where you're going to, you know, perfect your craft at. And those practice sessions are invaluable. You know, it helps to fine tune my timing, my delivery. Don't get it twisted. I do be nervous sometimes, but I've learned basically to embrace that and just to have a really good time with the audience. Because it's, at the end of the day, they're there to have fun, but it's essentially, even though I'm having fun, it's my job to make them laugh. I do have like what they call pre-show routines that I do. You know, I do my deep breathing exercise. I always pray. You know, you and I talked about that. My faith. I pray prior to that. I like to have, you know, positive self-talk to myself and say, hey, you can't walk out now. You gotta go up there. I kind of like canvas the crowd depending on where I'm at, what city, what type of crowd, if they've been drinking already, if they how they are receptive to other acts that may have gone before me, if they seem, you know, dependent. They can be African American crowd, can be Caucasian crowd. All of that stuff plays a factor in what I do, how I prepare for the audience, how I'm going to dress them, you know, who's sitting up front, just to get in the right headspace.
I'm curious, and this is about stand-up. Do you have particular themes that you like to address in your routines? And also, what do you like to talk about with your audiences? What do you like to sort of ping them with?
Okay, that's an excellent question. Basically, I like to draw my inspiration like from life experiences, just things that I think that make me randomly laugh at stuff. I feel like I want to be able to have a relatable premises when I'm with, you know, dealing with the audience. So like, I'm not, like I told Katie, I'm not the comedian that stands up there and says, what did the cat say to the goose? You know? And I explained to her that my comedy style is of like Dave Chappelle. It's like the same like him, like I'm going to speak the truth and some people might be offended. And again, it's not my whole thing to get up there and have a bashing moment, because that's not what we do, because that's not what we want to do. Although I know some other comedians do go really hard in the paint when it comes down to that. But you got to understand that this is a comedy show. We are not filtered. You know, I think I told Katie once before, I went to a show where they try to filter me, told me what I can and cannot say. And for me, Marty Pants that I am, you know, I said everything they told me not to say. You know what I mean? For me, back to your initial question, I talk about real life stuff, you know, like what made those people think that jumping inside of a pill capsule was going to get them any closer to the Titanic, you know, stuff like that. Would be like, yeah, I know what you mean. I want people to not only think that I'm standing up there performing for them. I like to create a realistic type of joke or setting that way they can feel as though that they're part of the joke, like, oh, yeah, I know what she means. Or, you know, stuff like, yeah, well, I farted earlier. I shit my pants, but I didn't, you know, I decided to come on set, you know, so like, don't act like nobody in here knows. I make them raise their hand. How many people? And I might trickle with them and say, ooh, you're nasty. That's your man? Wow. You know, stuff like that. But I like to engage with them and just making sure at the end of the day, it's a well-timed punchline.
Okay.
Before we talk about the prison work, Brandy, also, you know, two other themes we talked about. One was like how we pivot. You're opening for Dave Chappelle. You just mentioned him, or a number of different comedians. Sometimes you're the main act and sometimes you're the opener. And, you know, you've got to warm up. I love it. Your job is even harder than Dave's because you've got to warm them up.
Yeah,
and make them ready. And we talked a little bit about kind of the patchwork quilt of the stories and examples, and we both said, you know, you say one thing and you see what people do with that, and then you're ready with three other options depending on their reaction. And I was so impressed with your skill at doing that. I don't know if you want to share some real life experience where it went wrong or where it went great, but I thought you were so skillful. And you said, you know, just practice and keep doing the work. But for some of our listeners, where I go with that is we have to practice about healing and about being, putting in the work, putting in the time to get good at anything, including recovery and healing. So I thought, you know, even though you're not talking about survivorship, I still think you're talking about commitment.
Yes.
And yeah, so maybe just a little bit about that.
Well, I've had some times where it just didn't go well. You know what I mean? I've never completely bombed a whole, thank God.
That's good. Well, tell us what that means. Like when you totally bomb, you get booed off, I assume. They close the curtain on you.
Yeah, they will boo you, or pretty much know, okay, let me go to the bathroom, go get some water or something. But
I would be so funny. Like if you, that's a great idea, Brandy. Next time I'm in like hot water. I've not talked to our audience so much about my moments, but I'll give you one or two and then maybe we can reciprocal share. I was speaking at the Citadel in South Carolina in Charleston a long time ago. And I remember I had on heels and I'm blonde, right? So it was in the gym And it was mandatory. All the men, it was all men back then. It was entirely male.
Oh, wow.
And I was probably their first sexual assault speaker ever in history. And I kept thinking in my own darn head, like the dumb blonde who trips, right, across the stage. And so here's what goes down. I go into the bathroom just before to make sure I don't have to pee on stage, right? Pee in the gym, like for an hour and a half. And I come out and the student body president, he says, just so you know, my boys do not want to be here. So I have that. Then they're all assembled begrudgingly in their uniforms in this big gym. And I do actually trip over a corded mic wire.
Oh, wow.
I'm going in like knowing they hate me. Then it's all men, and there's probably two women to be seen anywhere who happen to work there.
Uh-huh.
And then I do literally trip.
Oh my God.
So I am like nervous as heck. I know that I'm like their least favorite thing. And so I'm not even going to entertain Brandy. I'm going to be like the devil.
Whoa,
like
wow.
Their most hated. Yeah. So then I pick up the mic and I had to recover. So I actually made a dumb blonde joke about myself.
There you go.
I think I said, yep, guys, you are right. I have blonde hair. I just tripped. And I'm sure that you all have a thousand thoughts about who I am and what I'm here to do right now.
Right.
But
right.
Then I just went with it. Like, I think they all like cajole, like, you know, did some sort of guffaw, like big hoo-ha at my expense. But, you know, some of the moments in my life, I would say, Brandy, probably a lot like you. That's why I think we clicked so well.
Right.
We're like ready to take it. Like whatever happens, we'll just go with it.
That's right.
Yeah. So I mean, that was just my example, but I'm sure you have more. I mean, I don't know, because, you know, I'm white and you're black. I don't know how you feel that impacts how people see you. We all have these stereotypes that people take a quick gander. And I think one thing that's really interesting is this podcast, we don't use our cameras, and it was my choice. I'm like, I don't want to be judged on what I look like.
Absolutely.
Like, I get that enough every single darn day.
Absolutely.
And so I just thought one of the coolest things about meeting you is like we both were really open and honest with each other about being female, but being different skin colors and also being judged. And in the world we live in, you get on a stage and you have about 5 seconds and people have made up their minds.
Yep. You're right. You're right. And with every comedian, it's bound to happen to all of us. You know, when a joke doesn't go well, I never take it personal, you know, because laughter basically is subjective. And like you said, does it matter? Your question was, does it matter what type of setting I'm in? I think that was one of the first things that I addressed. You know, I found that when I'm performing, like if it's in front of a more male crowd, more black crowd, I'm going to scope out and figure out where I'm at. Okay. So if I know I perform really well down in the South, because for whatever reason, Southerners love hearing us being from New York. They love our voice, our accent from up there. So I automatically get an edge up automatically. I get an edge up. And just the fact that I'm from New York.
I love that, Brandy.
You know, so that plays a big part. If I'm dealing with a white crowd, automatically. No problems. You know what I mean? Because they come out to, hey, we're going to a comedy show. We're going out there to have a great time. We're going to laugh, especially if they don't know you.
Let me ask this question. Like, there's so many weird similarities that you and I have. And Clara, please chime in at some point. But here's another one, Brandy. I was thinking about this. Like, you go and you're sometimes performing in front of all white. And I've been at historically black colleges in Jacksonville, Florida, like where I'm the only white person and everybody's black. but we have to think about race and our gender differently But also just because I love that we're both very cognizant of that in our work. And then for our listeners who are survivors listening to this crazy, crazy podcast today, like I just think one thing that I hope our listeners get out of this conversation is be bold, be courageous, and know that there is a lot to be gained from just trying. You don't have to think you're amazing. You just have to try to go and be bold. You just have to try and go and heal. And you know, it's so rewarding. So anyway, Brandy, back to my question. Like, hello? I think when you go and think about when you've spoken to like all white audiences or mostly white, or like how do you change it up and develop a tone and tenor that works for different types of groups?
Okay, well, it all, like I said earlier, what I was saying is that a lot of times I'll get to the venue early and I watch other acts prior to me and just see if they're loosened up a little bit, if they're sauced up already, you know, if they're a stiff crowd and everybody that goes up there and they're telling jokes and they seem funny, but you can always tell if you have an audience that's intentionally, I want to see if you can make me laugh. Like just trying to like be stiff with the comedian, you know. But if they're pretty much, you know, loosened up and they're laughing at anything, if they laugh at a fart, if they laugh at a sneeze, then you know that it's going to be an easy night, you know.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. And, interesting.
And,
yeah.
And what sense. I was saying earlier, a lot of times, depending how you dress, guys are attracted to that. So they'll laugh at that. You know, even though I'm a very comfortable comedian when I'm on the stage, I'm not in high heels, to say the least, because I would ultimately die if I tripped and fell. And I'm not blonde. So, you know, that would kill me. But, you know, I usually have on sneakers. I'm very comfortable. You know, if you're performing in front of females, like a group where there's a lot of females there, they tend to be a little cattiness, you know what I mean? But if they're there on a date with their man, I engage with them. And like I said, being from up north and especially being from New York, when you go down south, they treat you real nice. You know what I mean? The hospitality across the board, food, travel, and being on their stages is welcome.
Yeah, it's so interesting. That's another crazy thing is I grew up in Georgia, outside of Atlanta, and you grew up in New York. So like we had the reverse. Like when I moved up north, Brandy, I was like, I better darn lose that Southern accent real fast.
But you still have it.
Yeah, I have a little bit.
Yeah, I hear it.
Yeah, but it's just so interesting. Like, but I think another thing I would encourage our listeners to learn from today is go see the world, go travel, go experience lots of communities. If the one you're in is hurting you and closing you out, there are a zillion more communities that you could go join, whether physically or virtually.
Absolutely. I agree. Yep. I definitely agree with that.
So I'm curious to know, how do you use your skills in your work?
Oh, in the prison. Oh my God. Honestly, my convicts, they love me. Like my movie, actually, like I think I was telling Kay, who was on the plane, my movie actually played inside the prison. So they were looking, they were like, wait. And he's looking back and forth. It's like a tennis match. He's like, is that you? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh, shoot. Yo, you're a celebrity. I'm like, no, I'm not a celebrity. You know, so a lot of times I get inmates that they write books and they're like really, really super talented in there. And they'll say, hey, can you take a look at this? Can you read this? You know, just because of who I've may have come in contact with, rubbed shoulders with, you know, being in the industry and stuff like that. They'll ask me, can I look at it? Do I think it's good enough to like go in the movies? And I say, yeah, you know what I mean? Not everything is a blockbuster movie. You got to start somewhere. So, you know, they send it out to their families. As far as jokes and stuff like that, like, hey, I got to tell you this joke. And I'm like, what's this? Okay. Yeah. So here's the routine. You're on stage. You're doing this. You're doing that. And I'm like, no, nah, that's corny. I don't like that. That would be corny. They'd be like, all right, what about this? They'll come up to you. So they always ask me, like, for instance, they all know that I'm on this podcast today. They all know about it.
Like, that's so awesome, yeah. Brandy. We're loving it.
I told them. So here's the crazy part. Because I had to, like Katie said, I had to go down to Charlotte because I went to a white party. And this is funny because Katie was like, a white party?
I know. Brandy, I just want to tell our listeners, like, when you said you, like, I'm sitting next to a Black woman and you said you're going to a white party. And I was so naive. I was like,
yeah,
what?
She.
I was like thinking race. I was like, you're going to an all white party. Like, I didn't even have I did not even have the courage to initially ask you what that was. I was like, crap. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, it was funny because I get that a lot. So she and I, we was breaking down stuff. So she's like, a white party. So as soon as I said that, she had this look on her face like, oh no, is she racist? I'm sitting right here. Oh my gosh. You know, and I was like, no, white party is when you wear all white. And then I could just see the sense of, on her face.
Oh my gosh. It was so
funny because
so hysterical.
Yeah. And it's something that happened. It wasn't just like, you know, strictly for just black culture. No, it's everywhere. You know what I mean? All white party. But you know, so when I broke it down, I said, you ever been to like a black tie party, black tie fair? She's like, yeah. I said, same thing where everybody, she's like, oh, I got you. I said, you may have a scarlet party where everybody has to wear red. Or you may have a linen party where everybody must wear some form of linen, you know. So she's like,
know.
Oh, gotcha. So that was
the
funny.
Difference is Brandy. Brandy has an awesome life of lots of parties, and I just don't.
Oh yeah, that was hilarious. So
I know.
So when I told my inmates, I said, listen, I said, you know, because they knew I was coming down for the white party, and I told him, I said, oh, you know what? I said, I met this lady on the plane. And usually, I go to sleep. I tell you, no lie. I put my headphones in. I go to sleep, you know, and that's just the deal. And I remember she was digging in her bag. I walked up. She was digging in her bag, getting something, you know. I'm like, oh, gosh, I got here. I got on today. We both was riding first class. We was like we was in seat one, right?
Remember, we put our feet up.
Yes. We was like, in first class.
I was like, we might get fired if we put our feet on this wall. But we were like, I'm not going to get fluid in my legs if I don't have to.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to sit next to this lady. Okay, good. She doesn't smell bad. She smells nice. So good. No, because that's like big for me. Like, that's like my worst nightmare. You know what I mean? So I've been lucky except for one time flying back and forth from different shows, different places. So I'm sitting next to her and she introduced herself and I was trying to get the tray thing up. And I'm like, just like, oh gosh. So she shows us, oh, she's probably thinking it's my first time in first class. This is awesome. So I had like a whole routine going down in my head. And you never know, Katie, I might do another show and you might be the butt of the jokes.
You could take the brunt of your jokes.
Oh yeah.
You could totally I'm a good source of
material. Oh gosh, absolutely. So then we got to talking. So she was telling me who she was and stuff like that. Cause I told her I was in, you know, filming and movie and stuff like that. She told it was a doc mm-hmm. on her. So I'm like, oh, cool. So we're talking one thing. So then in my mind, I'm like, I should go to sleep. But then she had a look in her face like, I should go to sleep. So then she comes out and she says, you know what? I shouldn't even really be talking so much. I'm going to let you go. I was like, no, we're good. And it was only an hour and 45 minutes. We talked about so much and she just had me at peace. You know what I mean? We looked at pictures. We looked at our children. We looked at flowers, birds, bees, everything. And I don't mean the birds and the bees. I mean, birds and the bees, like pictures. We talked about different travel places. I was in her phone scrolling. She was in my phone scrolling. We were just all over the place and it was just awesome. So when I got to Charlotte, My brother's out there. He said, hey, how was your trip? I know you went to that. I said, no, actually, I was sitting down to this lady named Katie Carson. And they said, who's that? They said, and I said, oh, well, she's the lady from Date Rape. She said, so I explained your story. Needless to say, back to the initial question, my inmates know all about you. And my trip, yes. And they know all about you and my trip. And I said, hey, you know, I sat next to this lady, da 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 da, everything. I just went over with you. And they're like, oh, awesome. So they know that I'm doing this podcast. And then, so of course they asked me, when is it going to air? Is it going to be right away? Because when I went on as a guest on The View, I was just in the audience for The View and the Tamara Hall show. They was able to see that on TV. It was like, when is it air? And I said, it should be airing Monday. So they asked me. So that's when I was asking, when is this coming out so that these guys can know and probably tune in or just people on social media platforms can log in. But back to what you said, they're constantly
talk about the guys at the prison. I mean, these are, totally think, here's where I'd like to start the convo mm-hmm. on that. We haven't delved on the podcast into one thing that men, I'll say men, you'll hear guys say, there's two ways that prison, well, we could talk about three things in prison. One is a guy will say, I would have sooner killed the guy than get raped. Like as if I would never be raped as a man because I would kill a guy if someone tried. That was one. Two is you'll hear a husband or a partner say, if my wife got raped, I would, or my daughter, father-daughter thing, I would kill a guy who raped my wife, daughter, girlfriend, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then the third thing we could talk about is, you know, the stereotype of like, you don't want to go to prison.
You drop the soap.
Because you'll get raped.
Right.
So
right.
I feel like there's three things that we could talk about. It's like men think that they could somehow absolutely go into kill mode if a guy tried to rape them. Two, this chivalristic idea, like I would kill a guy who raped my daughter. And thirdly, like, I don't know how, Claire, what do you think? Which one should we tackle first? They're all so good.
Yeah, they are. But I think that Brenda, you're in a particularly good position to talk about PREA, the Prison Rape Elimination Act, and what that means when you're actually inside. I mean, what does that mean for you? What does that mean for the inmates? And what kinds of experiences have you heard about? Because I think people, first of all, I think that whole drop the soap thing is so offensive because it's a whole lot of homophobia associated.
Yeah, that.
But also there's so many, I mean, I've been doing this work for a long time. And even in the early 90s, I worked for a national organization and I heard from the guy who founded, now I'm blanking out, sorry, because I know he's passed on, but the whole organization that was got PREA passed. And he was a survivor and it was from, you know, he was in jail for, you know, some kind of, he'd like done a protest or something. You know, it wasn't even really a crime, but he had been raped in prison and it had a lasting impact on him. And he got no help. So I just wonder, what have you seen, you know, and what kinds of stories have you heard? And you know, tell people about this act.
Oh, okay. Well, the prison, the acronym is PREA, and it stands for the Prison Rape Elimination Act. It's actually a Department of Justice federal law that was passed back early in 2003, and it was to address and prevent sexual assault and rape in the correctional facilities. Basically, in my experience, it set the standards from, it prevents, we have this program in place that we get trained yearly, actually twice a year, and making sure that how we can prevent, detect, and respond to any sexual abuse that may happen in the prison, and just to ensure that survivors receive the appropriate care and support in there. We have a formal reporting process that's in place. So like whenever an inmate may report an incident, they can do, you know, well, we as staff, we conduct a thorough investigation and we definitely provide medical and psychological support for these guys.
Okay, great. And of course, there are women in prison too, and they also are, that law applies to them as well.
Well, in my prison, there's only men. So as far as Prison Rape Elimination Act can also fall under the umbrella of the guards, yes. So for instance, like, you know, I've never had a situation where a female guard raped an inmate because there is no consensual sex in prison. So even if a female guard was having a romantic relationship with a convict, they can never say that, oh, it was consensual, because the inmates are always going to be wardens of the state. So it will always fall under rape regardless. So that's automatic. I've never had... where a staff member has raped, quote unquote, raped an inmate.
That's good to hear. But also, I just was sort of said that because, you know, beyond your situation specifically, right, that applies to anyone who's incarcerated. So that's really
important. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Brandy, just for the context of our listeners, I think it would be really helpful for them to hear what it is like where you work. And what's a prison life, and who, what kinds of crimes these men have committed. I will only share with you one thing. I once spoke Tipper Gore. Oh. Yeah, Claire, here's a zillion things you don't know. But Tipper Gore had me go to with her to a maximum security prison in Connecticut many years ago when her husband was in office. And that was my first experience walking through, you know, the metal detector. Uh-huh. And I gave a speech in front of these women.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to speak to our listeners, like, so Brandy, you can contrast your experience with mine.
Uh-huh.
So women at this prison, many of them were there because they had killed their perpetrators.
Yes.
It was like, oh my goodness. And many, I wanted to, like, they had no way to write because some of them were prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
From age 11, they lived on the streets. And so they've been arrested for either killing, usually their abuser, or they had lived on the streets for their whole lives and were probably, many of them, doing drug dealers. But most of them, when I had some time to talk with them, we couldn't write because most of them didn't know how to write.
Right.
Or spell or any of that. But it was one of the most humbling and meaningful. I mean, I can't say, like, so much of my life is full of moments like that,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I and that's why I think we got along so well on the plane. Brandy, our lives are so crazy different,
yeah.
Like, but also full of randomness.
Yes, yes.
And that's why, like, we were fast friends in an hour. Because we were like, there's not very many people like you, Brandy, nor probably like me. But my only experience then, I wanted to share it, was that one, which I did not share with you, that when we met, because I didn't even know about the prison until afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And you shared that with me, which was really cool that you opened up and you continued to do that. Which, another thing for our listeners, is like, all of us are great, big, awesome onions of layers and complex lives. And it's really hard to both trust another human to unwrap your onion.
Yes.
And also for us to unwrap our own onions with another soul. But one of the reasons I wanted so much to do this podcast with you, Brandy, is to teach our listeners that you and I had this 1 hour and maybe 12 minute experience,
yeah,
together. And look at what a beautiful relationship.
Absolutely.
From it. And so I wanted to give hope and courage to our listeners to say, don't give up. An hour and 12 minutes can change your life.
Absolutely. And you want to know something, going back to, like, the judgmental thing? A lot of times people, they ask me, how does that affect my life and stuff like that? Because you and I, we were talking for a while, and it seems like you are healed. So thank God for that in your situation that happened, unfortunately, years ago in college. But the reason why I didn't bring up, oh, I work in the prison at the very moment, or while we were talking that whole time, is because a lot of times I might get judged. So you'd be surprised, right? Because I didn't know how you were going to view me. Like, oh, so you make sure, you know what I mean? I didn't know, not that you just said literally, but it can get viewed as, oh, so you make sure that those people are well kept in there.
I know.
The bad person, you know, hypothetically, that did this to me. And a lot of times I have to be very careful with who I'm talking to. Like, just something in society, like when there was a lot of cops killing a lot of Black people and this, that, and the third. For me, I live in a nice suburban area. So it was nothing for me to drive home with my uniform shirt and let me just get home. You know what I mean? I had to take my uniform shirt off because I got grouped into that. Oh, you're a cop, you're law enforcement, you know, and I had that part.
Oh my God.
Being in the jail. And a lot of times if meeting someone new, like, hey, how are you? Hey, my name is Brandy, like a guy or whatever. And then having to screen, you know, a person, because first of all, if they've been in the wrong lifestyle and they're like, oh, you're a CO, oh my gosh, you know, and it's like a turnoff. It's like being a prostitute and wanting to date a pastor. It's like, oh, you're a pastor. I don't think, you know what I mean? So it's that, I get that sometimes. And then, you know what I mean? So, and it all depends. Like for me, it's always a big screening process, you know, and then with my line of work, I'm not to date anyone that is on parole or something like that. So like to answer your initial question, the different type of people that are incarcerated in my prison, there's so many things. I have homicide. Well, I'm on death row right now. So everybody on my block has been convicted of homicide. I can't say that they have done it because, you know, some of them are in court and so forth, but that's another story. But at the end of the day, I have homicide. I have assault, robbery, kidnappers. I have burglars. I have grand theft, larceny, arsons. I have drug offense guys in my jail. I have drug trafficking, distribution, manufacturing. Of course, now what we're talking about, rape, sexual assault, child assault, indecent exposure.
Randy, I have before you keep going, let's hold steady on rape for a second.
Mm-hmm.
My fear is when you say, I think America is still so racist, I'm thinking, I'm just going to ask this, it's very blunt. Do you have any white rapists?
Oh, yes. Are you kidding me?
Oh, good. Okay.
Oh, my God. God.
I was like, see, I'm afraid that, like, death,
oh, no.
Death row and, like, all, it's still so no. racist.
Oh, no.
Oh, good.
Oh, no. Let me explain to you.
Do you have any Asian rapists?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes. But I'm sorry, I
sound happy. But I'm like,
no, I get what you're saying. Because like on TV, you just see a certain demographic.
Right.
Some people who get a cut on this or a break on that. And that's why, like, and for me to adapt in society is it's a little bit harder for me because everybody, like what people, like some people might think, oh, okay, this, all right, let me just watch my purse on the bus with this black guy. No, I am there for 23 years around all walks of life. I'm around the guys that smell good. They clean, they dress nice in there. They keep their cells immaculate and they probably have maybe one or two umbis that they may have killed. I have some that look finer than fox fur that you will probably date and want your family to meet, and they probably might be a serial rapist. You know what I mean?
Oh,
so a lot of times before, when I first started, I used to have that notion of, okay, you get raped and it's probably in a dark alley and someone that's like looking nasty looking. No, not all rapists look like that. Some of them are quite attractive. Some of them are very smart. Some of them may not be as smart. You know what I mean? So there, I have an inside view of anybody can be a potential killer. So, or rapist or whatever. You'd be surprised. And I've talked to them when I was in college. I had to do college papers and I would ask, what made you do this? What made you do that? You know what I mean? And yeah, so there's all walks of life, all backgrounds, you know, it's not something that I want to say, I'm talking about rape that's just so premeditated. In some cases it is, but yeah, it is a sickness, you know, children, there's some people who are just turned on strictly by children. Some of them that are turned on. And then here's another thing. A lot of times people think that, like there are times where I'm in there and I know that I don't have to worry about these group of inmates because these group of inmates are not into women. If that makes sense. So I don't have to worry. You know what I mean? So and they're more attracted to probably males. You know what I mean? So it may not be me that needs to worry about walking down this range or whatever. It might be a male officer that may need to worry more than me. You know what I mean? There are some inmates that have no liking at all. And I just had a conversation with one of my inmates. I said, you have to understand that not everybody's going to like you. I said, there's some people that don't like me because I'm a female. There are some people that, and I'm talking about inmates. There are some people in here that don't like me because I'm black. I did nothing wrong and they just don't like me. I said, so that kind of stuff happens out in society and inside the wall. I call it inside the wall. So yeah, to answer your question, there's white, Spanish, black. There are people who have raped just males or male children. It's not just subjected to that pretty female that they raped in the alley. Some were date rape And I have some that was 21 and the girl was 17 and they had a daddy that was like, oh, hell no. You know what I mean? You're over age. I have those. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all walks of life when it comes down to rape. It's all walks of life.
And can I ask, have any of the, since you seem to have a good connection with the men you're working with, do any of them ever share personal stories of their own histories with you?
Oh, yeah. You got to realize I've been there 23 years. Some of these guys have come in there before they even had grandkids. You know, some of them I've built a rapport with. Some of them have told me their stories. Like I told you, for instance, when I was taking criminal justice in Penn State, I had to do a paper. And then we all know with college, you have to cite your source. So I didn't tell, again, that was another reason, another thing I didn't tell them, you know, my professor in my class that I worked in the prison. You know, I just didn't tell them that. And I spoke with some of my inmates and said, hey, I got to do a paper for class. You know, I need your help. All right, what you need? Just need to know, what was your thought process prior? You know, I was getting high, or, oh, it was a gang initiation, or, yo, you know, I was wilding out or whatever. I wrote the paper, turned it in. Professor was like, where's your sources? I said, right there, inmate Jane John Doe, 1234556, whatever. You just can't pick up a newspaper clipping or go to the, I said, I didn't. I spoke to them. Okay, so let me get this straight. How did you speak to them? I said, I went in there and I spoke to them. And they told you about their crime like this. Yeah. Okay, you must think I'm joking. Okay, now this is the part where I have to tell you, I work in a prison. You work in a prison? Yeah. Here's my ID. Wait, are you serious? I said, hold on. I called the prison. I said, hey, what's up? And they said, yo, what's up? You coming in tonight? I said, no, just calling, you know, verification. I work here. Yeah, what are you talking about? What are you doing? Brandy, you all right? I said, yeah, I'm good. I hung up. They said, oh, shit. You really working there? I said, yeah. This is, you have the ultimate story on murder, what goes through a guy's head when they're thinking about murder. If they have remorse, I'm so in tune with my guys that the anniversary of the sentencing, they're usually a little different. The anniversary of the death, you know, or rape or whatever their crime may have been.
When you say different, though, Brandy, what do you mean different? They're a little different. They're like, what happens in their...
They become a little bit more sheltered. And that's our job to know. You're supposed to know your image. You're supposed to know. It's a relationship. It's a working relationship, professional.
Wow.
Yes.
Brandy?
It's a professional working relationship. You're supposed to know, okay, if this guy comes out every day and watch TV and he's sitting up there, or he comes up to the bubble and say, hey, what's up, New York? Because a lot of them call me New York. He said, hey, what's up, New York? And I noticed that he's not coming out, or he didn't go to lunch, or he didn't take his tray today. You're supposed to know that kind of stuff, because they may be contemplating suicide. They may have gotten a Dear John letter.
Oh, no.
Or they may, in cases of rape, you know, they may have been propositioned for sex. They may have been having sex. They may, whatever. You're supposed to know those changes, good or bad. And a lot of times I have... She was asking me, I have this rapport. A lot of them know I know the Bible. So they'll come to me. They look at me as either a mother, a sister, a daughter, a niece. And they have to, despite what they're in jail for, they have to create that, hey, I'm a tough guy. I'm tough, you know. And they'll come to me and say, hey, can I talk to you? You know, my grandmother, she was diagnosed with cancer. A lot of them know I'm a cancer survivor. Or, you know, my daughter, you know, she's seeing this dude and this, that, and the third. Or, yo, hey, I've been calling my wife or my girlfriend, you know, I think she got another dude. Would you this, that, and the third? I have a rapport with them. And I try to, they try to tell us, don't look at their crime, because then you start to judge them. You start to be biased. Okay. Mm-hmm. I talk to all of them. I tell them, I will treat you all like men first. I say, because you are a man first, whether you chose to be a homosexual in here or out there, whether you are a killer, a rapist, a thief, whatever, forgery, DUI, I treat you like men first because you're a man first. I said, the moment you start acting weird or getting different on me, that's when I will treat you according to how you act. So they respect that. You know what I mean? Do I know what all of them are there for? Yeah. And the good thing is they all know I know what they are there for. Everybody's crime to the detail. I've read every little piece and bit of it, you know, and they know. And I don't treat them like that. Do I like their crimes? No. There are certain crimes that I'm like, holy crap. But I don't say that to them because I'm there to do a job. If I can't handle it, then quit.
You're amazing, Brandy. You know, I hate to say it, but I fell in love with you the moment we talked. Like,
yeah.
Love is a beautiful word, and it means like I honored you so much and respect you.
Thank you
so much. And it's a lot because you persevere in a way that is unique and beautiful. And, you know, I'm sure you must sometimes feel alone in holding all that, holding all of what you have to hold for these men. I mean, like that's a big deal too. You're having to hold men who have committed crimes somewhere in a space for your mind and heart to make sure that they don't end their lives. I was thinking about like how beautiful your soul must be,
right?
To be able to balance knowing that someone has done something so terrible to put them in this prison. But yet they are still also so human and vulnerable and probably hurt and hurting.
Right. What we sign up for is what we call the three C's: care, custody, and control. You have to care about what's happening with these guys to a certain level, not crossing the lines of fraternization, of course. Custody, just making sure you have accountability of who's there, what's going on, and control, keeping control of your unit or whatever post that you're working on. You understand what I'm saying? Like I just recently had a situation where I had an inmate that's a diabetic, and that sits close to my heart because my father was a diabetic, rest his soul. He died from complications of that and dialysis. So I'm really in tune with inmates that are diabetic. So from time to time, even when I was on old housing units and stuff like that, if I see, they'd be like, "Yo, New York." And I'd be like, "Hey," I said, "What's your sugar? What was your sugar?" It's like, "It was 280. I said, "Why is it 280? What are you doing?" "Oh, no, I'm sorry." And that might be a killer. You know, I just had just recently a gentleman who the inmates, they said, "Hey, I think I think something is wrong with him." I really don't care too much for that inmate, and I don't have to care for him. And just like they don't have to care for me, they're there to do their time, and I'm here to make sure that they're okay while they're doing their time. But I go there, I say, "Hey, how you doing?" I go to his cell, "How you doing? You all right?" He said, "Yeah." And this is a white inmate. You know, and just usually has a lot of snottiness to say, but it doesn't matter to me. And one thing I always say,
oh,
I said,
crap, but Brandy, wait, like now you're also I forgot. Of course, you're also dealing with sexism and racism the whole time.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my
God. And then I tell him, I said, "Listen, no one dies on my watch." I said, "I don't have to like you, but it's my job to make sure you're all right." And that's one thing that those guys respect. You know what I mean? I don't care what they're in there for. They don't like a bullshitter. If you can't do something, don't say that you can't. It just doesn't matter. And I tell new people that come in, if that's not something that you can do, don't do it. Don't be somebody that you're not. Meaning, I'm a jovial person. You know, "Hey, what's up?" I'm not goofy like, "Duh," but I'm, you know, "Hey, what's going on?" I'm not going to be, you know, tight shirt, because it takes too much energy and life is too short. When I was 10, I thought living into like 60 or 70 was a lifetime. Now it's coming up right on it's right there, like being delivered by Uber. Like, "Hey, time's up." So like,
Brandy, I know we're in our 50s.
And it's like
right there.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, I don't have another more of these. Like, you know, just like just certain things, you know, it's like reality kicks in. But when you're like 8 or 9, it's like, "Oh, 40? I got all my life." No, I'm like struggling and stressed out about that. So I don't have time to be at the jail, you know, trying to not be happy. If I'm in a good mood, I'm in a good mood. I'm not going to not be in a good mood for these guys to take me serious. They take me serious smiling. They take me serious if I say, "No, we're not doing that." And they respect that, because if we can do it, or if I want to do it, or it's okay, then I'm going to say okay if it's not going to affect anything. You know, they got to see the human side of you, because you got to realize we are always, as guards, we are always outnumbered. And I make this clear to new staff. You never, ever, ever have control over inmates. They have control over themselves. So at any moment, if they want to beat you up, rape you, kill you, whatever it is they want to do, we will get help eventually, but if you are the intended target, you have more to lose. It's a little too late.
again. And I tell people that. So all you have is your rapport. We don't have no guns in there, no nightsticks to beat them up. You know, we don't have any of that. All you have is your rapport and your personality. And I have to say, I've not been assaulted, but I'm not a kiss ass. Excuse my French. You know, I'm a comedian, so I have a potty mouth. But I can't stress being in there, being stressed out. I have to care about certain dudes that if I was normally out on the street, I probably wouldn't, you know, go as hard in. But I understand that some of them have remorse. Some of them have repented for their sins. And I have to tell other staff and just let inmates know, hey, I'm just here to babysit you. And I'm going to be honest with you, ladies, working in a prison is a really big babysitting job. They, okay, can I do this? They're like, wait a minute. Didn't you just kill somebody? Ain't you a tough guy? Didn't you just punch somebody in the head and knock all their teeth out? You know what I mean? It's like, oh, New York, can I do this? Or can I do that? You know, and it's just, why? How come I can't? Why can't we do this? Or what time is this? And one thing they like is consistency. So if they consistently lock up at this hour, that's what they like. They need direction. It's like I said, it's like a relationship. If you don't know when your boyfriend or your girlfriend is coming home, tonight is 8 o'clock, tomorrow's 2 o'clock, sometimes they cook, sometimes they don't. It creates chaos, and they don't like chaos, meaning the inmates. So if you're just the same person with maybe a little tweak of today, I'm in a bad mood, I'm not feeling so well, they know how to deal with that. And I respect that when today they may be having one of those, I'm not so much in a good mood today, New York, not today. Or vice versa, you know, and that's how I'm able to get through it. I've been asked a lot of times on the mentoring committee, how do you deal with it? I said, it's like being in a big nightclub. You're the spotlight. You got the red dress on pretty much. And they like what they see, period.
This was great stuff. I do want to ask a little bit about your writing and acting, if we can do it.
Sure. Wait, Claire, so, Claire, before but, yeah, I yeah. Let's definitely land on that. That's a happy place. I just have one last question because I think our listeners are going to be, I mean, Brandy, the last question I have about these guys mm-hmm. that I think survivors will sit with is they might want to hear a little bit about what it looks like to feel remorseful. Or here's the stat. The average rapist rapes 12 to 17 times before going to jail, and the recidivism rate is huge. Mm-hmm. You're sitting with these exact men
yes.
who might have done it 12 times.
Yes.
And then I think a cool thing to tell, you know, you're on the front lines, and they tell you, I'm sure these men tell you things that they've never told anyone. You're probably half. They're confessional.
Yeah.
I can you're like, they're like,
yeah.
No, you're the boss lady. You're the comedian. You Brandy, I'm like overwhelmed with how many hats you wear. But you wear them all so beautifully well.
Mhm. Mhm.
So what about when do you ever feel like they've think about what they did differently, or do you think that they just crave this power and control? Power and control is the root of rape, and maybe it's to feed their own vulnerable egos, or maybe to satisfy their own past abuses. So what do you think about that little bit before we go back to Claire's question?
Okay, so as far as like being there confessing, yeah, I would have to say there has been some times in a roundabout way when they have, you know, confessed what they may have done, you know. But one thing about them, they're very careful about how they address certain topics when it comes down to their cases. A lot of them I have spoken with, and not just rape, but some of them express deep remorse for their actions, and they genuinely regret the harm that they have caused. And, in some cases, try to reach out to the families, the victims. And I've seen in some cases where inmates have come to me and they say, hey, look at this letter, or look at this from my attorney. And I read it, and it's the victim forgiving them. And that is the closure that some of these guys needed, because like that, it would really play on their conscience and stuff like that. Like, you know,
I destroyed that girl or I destroyed that young boy, talking about children now, because there's so many different walks of rape in my world of work. And they said, I destroyed that person. I've done this. I've done that. They carry that baggage. And I've had some that come to me and say, look at this. You know, they forgive me. I feel better, you know, because they've asked for forgiveness. There are some that don't feel remorse for their actions. I've had some where I've spoken to and they said, listen, you know, she wanted, they still may. And then some of them still maintain, you know, their innocence and or have just, like I said, had have justifications for their crimes. Like, oh, I did this, you know, we were drinking or we were smoking weed. One thing led to another. Or in some cases, I was a drug dealer. She wanted, you know, drugs from me in exchange, you know. So some of them struggle with denial or whatever, or just if they find it difficult to be genuine in their remorse. You know, over time, you know, like we have programs, their counseling support and stuff like that. And they have like coping mechanisms for them. But a lot of times they initially suppress feelings when a lot of times, like when they're around, I give you another great example. Sometimes when a person rapes a woman, there are multiple factors that may come into play. They may have grabbed her from somewhere, which you have kidnapping. They may have assaulted her, which was the beating. And then there was the rape. So some guys hide behind, hey, you know, my charge is assault. Or yeah, I did a kidnapping. And then once other inmates dig a little further, I'm like, no, you raped this person. And when you raped this person, yeah, you took her from blah, blah, blah in your car or at gun or knife point or whatever, and you punched her and beat her, but you also did this, you know? So some of them, they hide behind that. And then when you talk to them about that, which I have done, you know, I say, hey, let me talk to you. You know, once I feel we have that rapport, whether it's been, you know, a few years down the road or whatever, and I'll say, hey, you know, I want to ask you, you know, what happened there? What you mean? Nah, people trying me, you know, I've been beating up people. I want to talk about that situation back in December and such, blah, blah, blah. So some of them, they act like it didn't happen, or they hide that from other guys because that's a shameful thing. That's like the whole, you don't want to be known in jail as a rapist because contrary to popular belief, other, like some killers, they frown upon rapists or especially children, acts of crimes against children, if that makes any sense. There's a racism to crimes within the wall. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I hear you, Brandy. We could probably talk for another hour, but I know what one great thing is, I just want to keep rolling it back to our listeners. And usually, I don't talk that much about me and my life. Mm-hmm. And I just want our listeners to know, like, what Brandy and I built was a relationship of trust.
Yes.
And it's a glorious thing. And it gave me a lot of hope. And I'm sure, I hope very much it was reciprocal.
Yes.
In some way, Brandy, you know, like we've got each other and we both are these weird souls. And for our listeners, I think Brandy has like given us so much. Absolutely. So
we're so completely opposite. Like you said, like you were a victim of rape and here I am making sure the well-being of potential rapists and other people are taken care of. So it's like,
you know, so beautiful.
And not that I wouldn't like you, but the fact that you think I'm such a cool cat is awesome because it's like, you could be like, I don't like you. You know what I mean? Just not, you know, not in a real malicious way, but
totally.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you know, it's like if it's somebody who died from drunk driving, their family member died from drunk driving. And it's like, oh yeah, I run a bar. And it's like, oh, let me get this straight. What do you do when someone had too many drinks? I don't care. And it's like, you know, my such and such died from a drunk driver. So they feel a little biased to that. So the fact that we were able to click and then connect afterwards, it really meant a lot. I just want you to know that meant a lot because you didn't judge me like, you know, there were any bad harboring feelings towards what I do for a main living. You know what I mean? So that's why I kind of like made sure I said, oh, I don't want to do that because I don't know what might trigger. Because I mean, like you said, we only spoke for like an hour and 12 minutes. It was like 15 minutes going in the air, 15 minutes landing. We had a total of an hour and 42 minutes was the total flight. And it's like, and you had to go to your next flight and I was getting off. So it's like, ooh, don't want to talk about that just yet. Don't want to ruin the moment. So I had to hold on to that and then let you know later in text message. I said, hey, you know what? If she doesn't reach back out to me, I understand, you know, but if she does, which you did, which is awesome because we are definitely on polar opposites of the thing. So for someone to sit there and say, wow, are you all right with her? Are you all right with the fact that she's another female? Because usually two females in the kitchen, it doesn't work. And are you okay that that's a Black woman? Are you okay with that? Are you okay that, so she's a comedian and you fell in a pair of high heel shoes. You got, it's like, whoa, she might make jokes on you. And are you okay, Katie, with the fact that you were a victim and her job is to make sure those suspects that made you a victim is okay? You know?
That's the most, Brandy, you summarized it better than I could. It is the most beautiful yin and yang, like
opposites attract.
Religion, like we are the yin and yang, and we need each other because we make each other whole.
Yes.
We are both sides of different coins, and it is the most beautiful yin and yang ever.
Yes, yes.
And so it remains a glorious highlight for me personally, and I hope for our listeners to hear you and I dialogue like this.
Yes.
Like, I think our listeners can find joy and hope and healing.
Absolutely.
Knowing like how incredible it can be to like be, I think the thing that unites us, Brandy, is we both have expansive, generous, and open souls.
Yes.
Like if I could, I'm trying to think of the right words, but it is just, it's nothing about, it's about our souls and our direction.
Yes.
That says like we are open, we are trying to heal, we are trying to work toward truth and helping people. And when we set aside, I think the glorious part of the journey to healing is when you set aside hate and anger, mm-hmm. you find grace and healing and helping.
That's right. And being able to forgive, you know, I told you with me just having that, that's something that I had to master. You know, there's some things that I'm like, you know, but I, in my spiritual grounding and believing in God and everything and just making sure, you know what, I have to forgive certain things, you know. There are some things that I've had to heal from, you know what I mean? It was rough for me, but through the grace of God, mercy, I was able to. And it just consistently staying focused on certain things and keeping busy, you know?
I think one thing I would like to tell our listeners is like when it comes to forgiveness, my definition, people ask me, I would dare say, Brandy, one difference between you and myself is at the end of a stand-up, no one has to ask you questions.
Oh, yeah.
You just leave.
I just leave. Yeah, I drop the mic and roll.
Yep.
Yep.
I love it. And unfortunately for me, they have a zillion more questions.
Yes.
So one of the ones I have to answer constantly is, how did you forgive him? And I always say this, and our listeners have never heard this. I always say forgiveness for me is not about him saying I'm sorry. I don't expect him to say I'm sorry. I don't think he would ever even think that maybe he did something wrong.
Right.
But his truth and my truth can be really different.
Mm-hmm.
And my healing has nothing to do with him.
Right.
My forgiveness of him is just my own going forward and being confident that I'm going to find a way to help more people.
Right.
It has, forgiveness is like, if I blame myself, I'm going to stop doing that and go forward.
Right.
And so I love what you said too, Brandy, though. My goodness. I hope we get to ride to Charlotte some other time.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Yes.
I hope so. Claire, you had a couple last questions, though.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know that Brandy wanted to talk a little bit about her current projects.
And yeah, so, and her movie. She's running a movie.
Yeah.
Let's land on
the highlight.
Yeah. Yeah. We're kind of running low on time, but tell us a little bit about it so our listeners can stay abreast of this. Yeah.
Okay. Well, as far as how with the comedy and stuff like that, I got into doing that, then doing a web series. Then I was thrown into a movie. And for as long as I can remember, I've always been like the storyteller, visions and stuff like that. So a lot of times, like I just did a video on social media. A lot of people ask me, what's my motivation for writing movies, writing books and stuff like that? Music, roadblocks. When people tell me, oh no, you can't do this or no, you can't do that. And it just fuels my fire to go harder, to write, to create a story. When I'm telling jokes, I'm creating a story right now. And it's just usually probably about 20, 30, maybe 40 minutes. Writing for me is a stress reliever. That's for sure. And in a lot of cases, it's really close to my heart. And I tell people that I don't want them to think, oh, well, that story, is that completely you? No, it's a little twists and turns, or it might be dealing with someone that I'm close to, or their situation, or something that I'm intrigued with. Right now, I'm actually currently writing two movies. I have a lot of different projects that I'm in. One that's like a spinoff for The Office. I just finished filming that a few weeks ago. Another movie I just did that's in editing called Tori, where I'm actually the main character in that, abuse, domestic violence. I'm part of that project. I'm with Newark Productions, multimedia productions crew. So they're a really good crew of people. So we work together. So when we're writing movies and stuff like that, and we need each other in there, we jump in. And my ultimate goal right now is just to be able to get my movies written and sent to BET Plus, major platform like that. Right now, my movie Vengeance Serve Cole is on Tubi TV, Amazon Prime, Google Play. It's on YouTube. So it can be purchased on any of those platforms. But I want to be able to write. I didn't direct that movie. I was actually the supporting actress in that movie. I want to be able to write my own movie and direct and produce it and potentially play in it. I want to be the Tyler Perry of writing, screenwriting and stuff like that. So that's what I'm currently doing right now. There is a writer's strike going on, but
we have
to keep writing. This isn't the time for people that write TV shows, movies, or whatever to just be sitting down, because when things open up, and it will, hopefully, you gotta have your material ready. You gotta be ready. And that's just what I do all the time. I prioritize my time from work. And when I'm at home, I'll say, okay, you know what? I'm gonna write tonight at least 10, 15 pages tonight, or I'm going to write for about an hour and a half. And how I do when I'm at work, if something comes to mind or I have, an idea, I write it down. When I come home, I go ahead and put it into format, movie format and stuff like that. So currently right now I'm doing a lot of different projects and making sure that my film writing is in sync with, certain timelines on how the movie's going to take place, casting calls and stuff like that, getting people that is going to be, ready and committed to when we have to shoot. Because that's the hardest part of getting people there when you need them there, and then getting a location. Because you might want to shoot a little part of your movie that deals with palm trees. Well, we're up here. Where's the palm trees? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's something that's fun for me, challenging. I like it, and look forward to seeing some of my movies in the theaters or all the major streaming platforms.
Awesome.
We cannot wait, Brandy. We cannot wait.
Yes, yes.
What a fabulous interview. I'm so grateful.
Thank you. I am as well.
Yeah. Anything else you want to share with our listeners?
Oh, well, on a few things, as far as what we spoke about with how I manage my time not necessarily managing my time, but just like with the comedy and stuff like that. My advice for anybody that is looking into doing stand-up or anything like that, or writing, would just be to follow their passion. Don't be afraid to, embrace your fears, because it's going to be scary times out there. You're going to fail more than you will succeed, okay? It's about ultimately pushing boundaries. And sometimes, you know, it's through humor or through writing or whatever, you know, you can conquer. And if some people have anxieties, they can conquer that. But just remember that laughter, you know, that's a powerful tool. And it definitely brings people together. And as far as Priya and some of the survivors and people that have gone through that traumatic experience, you know, I would definitely say just making sure that they understand in my job, what we do, we protect the rights and the safeties and the safety of the individuals that's in the prison. And just making sure that, you know, essential standards and stuff like that and procedures are addressed within the walls. I don't want anyone to think that it's an isolated incident that's out there in the street. You know, these things are happening in the churches, in the schools, in the military, in the prisons. It's everywhere. And no one is exempt from it. Just, you know, be aware and know your resources and don't be ashamed. You know, there are platforms like this that basically are here to help people and heal and help them through their journey of healing. So I would just suggest that, you know, look for your resources out there, whether it be with acting, comedy, whether it be if you were a victim of rape or you know someone, you know, reach out to people. And that's the only advice I can give. I give 1,000 advices, but I just, you know, and I'm here. You know, if anybody ever wanted to talk to me, they know where how to find me. NYC Get Money on all the social media platforms. You know, I talk to people. People have talked to me in my DMs, you know, and stuff is confidential, you know. And I think that's what really is a good tool to have. You know, a lot of times people think, oh, she's a comedian. If I tell her this, she's going to blah, 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 blah. No, I don't do that. You know, that's just about building a rapport with people. And yeah, that's the advice I have. Don't be afraid, whether it's to get on the stage, write a book, or to speak out if you've been a victim of rape or know someone that's been a victim of rape.
Thank you so much, Brandy. That was beautiful. Claire, can you close out for our listeners?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Brandy, again, for sharing your time with us. This was so much fun. So I just enjoyed myself thoroughly. And thanks to all our wonderful volunteers who make this podcast possible. And thank you to the listeners. You're here, you're listening, you're bearing witness, you're sharing this information. And if you would continue to share that information by sharing the podcast with your friends and connections so that other survivors can get this information as well. If you have any need for any resources, go to takebackthenight.org for the list of resources and also to find out how to connect with our legal support hotline. And of course, remember, as Brandy so aptly stated, self-care is really important and laughter is part of that. Self-care is essential to healing and to thriving.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Claire, and thank you, Brandy. And again, closing out, Katie Kessner, please continue to listen in for the Dear Katie podcast. Together, we will shatter the silence and end the violence. Take care.